keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves. Welcome, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined by my producer, Anya Esther, in the booth. I wanted to begin today. I had spent, was it on Tuesday, Anya? I can't remember. Tuesday when I talked about Gaza and the Guardian article that had come out. I think that was on Tuesday. If you want to catch that show, you can check it out at civicmedia.us. But I was really fired up, very angry, you might even say, about some comments that were made by two representatives of the state assembly, Democrats, to the Guardian about putting pressure on President Biden. And here's my position, if it wasn't clear on Tuesday. My position is, let's pressure Biden to try to improve the situation in Gaza. By the way, reporting yesterday and today says that has been saying that there's been a significant troop withdrawal of Israeli troops in Gaza. There's a fraction of what there was 2 weeks ago, that there's less fighting. It's less intense. So the pressure's working. And remember, there was a phone call from President Biden to Prime Minister Netanyahu that basically said, change what you're doing or else. That was the phone call. Now, it's really important to understand that for both Hamas and Prime Minister Netanyahu, it doesn't serve their interests in the short term to negotiate a ceasefire. It doesn't. Netanyahu, like Donald Trump, is banking on staying in power to keep himself out of all sorts of really serious legal trouble. In general, all else being equal, wartime tends to lend support to your current chief executive. Now, Netanyahu is the prime minister's under increasing pressure from within Israel to alter course in Gaza. But virtually all foreign policy experts and Mideast experts agree that Hamas has little to no incentive to negotiate a ceasefire, and neither does Prime Minister Netanyahu. So we have to understand, yes, the United States, Israel's most powerful ally. Clearly, President Biden's ultimatum to Prime Minister Netanyahu has had an impact. But our ability to pressure and bring about a ceasefire can only go so far. But the reason I bring this up again is I wanted you all to know that I extended invitations to both Representative Ryan Clancy, with whom I have more of an issue about the statements that he made to The Guardian and that were reported in an article just a few days ago. I'm trying to get the exact date on it. It's weird. It doesn't seem dated. I have the article up in front of me on the internet. This is The Guardian, the title of the article. It's by Malika Jabali. Almost 50,000 Wisconsin voters just told Biden to stop the Gaza war. Will he listen? I take stronger issue with Representative Clancy's remarks, but I've invited both him, Representative Clancy, and Representative Hong to discuss this issue on my show. I wanted to share that piece with you. So that invitation has been extended. I also believe that it is necessary for me to provide additional context around Representative Hong's statements, both in the Guardian article and some clarification or contemporaneous statements that she made as was reported in the Capital Times that I think clarifies and frankly shows that Representative Hong and I share a perspective on this, that she was not trying to suggest, despite how The Guardian may have depicted it, she was not trying to suggest that voters should stay home in November. The Guardian article date was posted on April 4th. So 2 days after our April 2nd spring election. So the first thing I wanted to address is the context that Representative Hong presented in the article of April 4th. So it is important to understand also that Representative Hong is the first Asian American ever elected to the Wisconsin legislature. So she is the first. And that is notable. She came, her family were immigrants. She worked her butt off, came up through the restaurant industry to become an executive chef. So I love food. So I really hope she comes on the show so we can talk about food too. Gaza and food, they do sort of relate in some way. But this woman is, and her family are the very model of the American dream, if you will. And this was the lead up in the Gaza and the Guardian article to her comments that I did take issue with. Some would say strong issue with. Here's what she said. This administration is prioritizing some lives over others, and leaders of color are having to go back to their communities with the lesser of two evils again. I think it would only be appropriate for me to acknowledge, as the first Asian American in our state legislature, as coming from a family and herself, her own story that represents very much so the American dream. She's pointing out something that I think communities of color feel oftentimes, this tension, this challenge within the Democratic Party, that there's not that the Democratic Party isn't doing enough fast enough to ensure that Black lives and Asian lives and Palestinian lives and Jewish lives and Muslim lives all matter just as importantly as white lives or Christian lives. And I think her lead up to her comments, that's really important context. I also want to point out that in the Cap Times article, the date on this is March 4th. So a month before the Guardian piece, Representative Hong was being asked about a resolution that was brought forward in the assembly that addressed the Gaza situation. And she had this to say, that the process of bringing forward such a resolution was, quote, uncomfortable, given the criticism that the lawmakers behind the resolution received from other members of the legislature. Nonetheless, Representative Hong pointed out that it was important and an opportunity to learn by having this uncomfortable discussion. And indeed, that's what we're doing today on the show. That's what I did on Tuesday on the show. She continued, I think it's an opportunity to live our values, that in order to create opportunities of comfort for others, leadership needs to be uncomfortable, Hong said. And I don't know how many Democrats have experienced a type of discomfort like this, where we are having to choose, even though we shouldn't have to choose. Who is worthy of more grace? Who is a victim who gets to have their suffering validated or more recognized than others? Hong said she remains, this was back in March before our primary. Hong said she remains unsure how she'll vote in the April primary, but will certainly vote for whomever the Democratic nominee is in November. So I wanted to put that out there. Very important that Representative Hong has said she's criticizing Biden. She's calling for more pressure on this administration to bring about a ceasefire in Gaza, more humanitarian aid. Those things are happening, perhaps not as fast as we all, or certainly Representative Hong would want. But she said clearly on the record to the Cap Times in March that she would support whomever the Democratic nominee is, including President Biden. Now, again, I've invited her and Representative Clancy to talk with me about this on the air. I think that would be an absolutely fantastic discussion. I've gotten a couple of emails from listeners on this topic. Thank you so much, everybody. Keep sending that feedback in, because unless we can address these sorts of complex topics, criticize other Democrats, correct the record, understand the context, and keep going back at it, we're not going to get any better at this. And this is really a collective effort that this isn't just about me and what I have to say. I want to hear back from folks on all of these topics. And the more complicated, the more nuanced they are, the more important it is for us to be able to have a conversation. That doesn't mean I'm not going to get upset, that I'm not going to call things out. But I'll always be willing to listen and try to correct or clarify the record where needed. The other small correction that I need to make is that I believe on Tuesday I identified Representative Clancy's party as Socialist Democrats. His party is a Democratic Socialist. I just want to be clear about that. The party that he is a member of is the Democratic Socialist Party, not the Socialist Democrats. I misspoke. So, with those clarifications made, I have been promising you, after teasing it, that I would share some of what I think is just an absolutely comprehensive rebuttal of all of the garbage legal arguments that have been made by Trump's lawyers in the wake of 2020. Most notably, and probably what I would call the leader of this distortion pack, John Eastman. This most comprehensive rebuttal, 128 pages worth, after a 34-day trial with 700 pieces of evidence and 24 witnesses, came about in California in his disbarment proceedings. I've been promising you for 2 days. We had some breaking news yesterday, so I had to cover that. But I've got it for you today. Don't go anywhere, anybody. I'm going to dig into the detail about why all this January 6th, why that was just a big, based on a big old fatty 2x4 lie that apparently John Eastman still can't let go of. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Join our conversation, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Yeah, I really love what I get to do every afternoon because it provides me the opportunity to get better, to learn more every day. And I do that best when you all engage with me. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. You can call or text. Otherwise, just go get the Civic Media app from your favorite app store. It is free. And with just one click, you can call and text the show. I've been promising you all for 2 days that I would take a moment to do a little detail work and to share with you what a judge in California concluded just last week, on March 27th, took a while for it to get out into the media, and it takes a while to digest it. What is a 128-page disbarment proceeding for John Eastman? Basically, the architect of the legal arguments and some of the factual nonsense surrounding election denialism from 2020. And Eastman continues to spout this stuff. Anya, if you're there, I think we're going to, let's take a little listen to John Eastman in an interview he gave. We're going to find the date. I don't know, Anya, if you've got the date off.
I'll pull the date up.
But let's take a listen. We'll listen to the first cut of John Eastman in this interview discussing why he told Donald Trump that it would be okay for Vice President Pence to stop counting the electoral votes on January 6th.
Now, you assisted Trump, who was your client, in trying to persuade Vice President Pence to postpone the counting for 7 to 10 days. To be clear, you weren't asking Pence to reject any electoral votes, as I believe Pence has stated. Rather, you were asking Pence to postpone the counting for 7 to 10 days, which might have given several key states time to determine who had actually won the election. But even delaying the vote was, as you readily acknowledge, a very aggressive position to take. But you thought it was defensible or plausible and in the circumstances worth pursuing. Circumstances we shall discuss. So, the central wrong, as you see it, is that the election was stolen. You thought Trump had actually won the election, right?
This is all the interview.
All things are fraud, but more importantly, and the things I focused on were the alterations of state election law by non-legislative actors, secretaries of state, county clerks, even in some cases, state judges. And they have no authority to do that under the federal constitution, which assigns the exclusive power to the state legislature to direct the manner of choosing presidential electors.
So, and I don't know if you can just rewind just a smidge right where Eastman starts talking, because he says something that's really important. He says, you know, normal things of fraud.
Circumstance. A very aggressive position to take and discuss. So, the central wrong, as you see it, is that the election was stolen. You thought Trump had actually won the election, right?
Normal things of fraud, but more importantly, and
there it is, right? I don't know if, as an attorney, I have ever answered a question about a presidential election, or if I would ever deign to answer a question about a presidential election, and asking the Vice President of the United States to stop counting electoral votes in the manner that has happened since our nation's founding, and respond to that with a statement so blasé as, you know, normal things of fraud.
Trump had actually, as you see it, is that the election was stolen. You thought Trump had actually won the election, right?
Normal things of fraud, but.
And I, what's also very interesting here in the sound, and don't worry, I'm going to get into the decision, but the decision deals with similar baseless assertions that have the most serious of consequences. Okay. So let's just forget who the candidates are for a minute, because this really gets to the heart of what this 128 pages is all about. If I were asked by a Democratic candidate or any candidate, not even for the presidency, but certainly for the presidency of the United States of America, to represent them, to make arguments relating to the conduct of elections. And if I were to get to a place or even consider for a split infinitesimal moment that there may be some sort of legal argument that could be made to interrupt the normal conducting of elections that has happened in the ordinary course. In other words, stop the peaceful transfer of power, to stop the transfer of power based on an election outcome. I, as an attorney, would need to see indefatigable proof, indisputable proof, irrefutable evidence, direct evidence to say we have a reasonable basis, not just some basis, but a reasonable basis. And as an officer of the court, I am duty bound to have that high of a standard. But forgetting my oath as a lawyer, just saying, hey, let's stop the transfer of power. I got to have something extraordinarily tangible with evidence, affidavits, proof, the opposite of conjecture, speculation, modeling, guesstimation. I would want proof before I would say to a candidate, let us interrupt our normal democratic processes. Let us argue, not just in court, but in the court of public opinion over and over and over and over and over again until today, that an election was stolen. In other words, as I have said, when it comes to Supreme Court nominees who sit for a lifetime, if the issue, if the question is so very serious, we have to adjust our evidentiary standards accordingly. So here, where the result is the interruption of the functioning of our democracy in the ordinary course that has happened since the founding of our country, shouldn't it have been the case that the lawyers would have demanded direct evidence and proof before making or even positing that argument? I'm going to dig into the language, the qualifiers, and the garbage that has been spewed about this when we come back, and the 128-page decision from the California Bar. You're not going to want to miss it. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked here on the Civic Media Radio Network. What's up, Wisconsin? This is Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther. I'm talking about John Eastman, basically Trump's lead lawyer for all the election denialism. He was peddling this stuff basically nonstop since about October of 2020 to date. And he's about to lose his law license permanently because of it. And my point here all along is pretty straightforward. If you're going to tell a candidate for the presidency of the United States that he should go out and tell people that an election was stolen, you better have proof. Not innuendo, not hunches, not junk science, not junk data analysis, not bootstrapped. Well, if you look at the zip codes and the postal things and the cell phone track, you better have proof. You better have unassailably credible witness statements. And if you're going to make a legal argument about it, not only should you have factual proof, your legal argument better be damn tight. Irrefutable, if you will. If you're going to argue to the American people with an angry mob in front of you, as John Eastman did on January 6th, we've got proof. You better have it. This is the law. You better know damn well that's the law. And what comes out in 128 meticulous, sometimes dry and boring pages from the California Bar is that John Eastman always knew that the legal argument was a lie because he had said so before. I'll tell you exactly what that is. He also knew, or should have known, that he didn't have direct evidence that any election irregularity would actually change the outcome of the election in Georgia, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, or in Arizona. And I want to be really clear here, because they use the word fraud like, well, but do you want to go out for pizza or burgers? You know, a little election fraud here, a little election fraud there. Election fraud means someone who is not legally entitled to vote, voting. That's fraud on the election. That's making up votes. That's switching votes. There's no evidence of this stuff. There's like, one person voted illegally. I mean, and that's been happening forever. All of the things that John Eastman talks about ain't voter fraud. And yet he uses the term. And so my point here is, if you're going to stop our democracy from operating, you better be certain. And notice that clip, Anya, that you played. The first one, there's this long sort of wind up by the interviewer, but the words that he uses are plausible, defensible, worth pursuing. I don't know if you can find where he says that exactly in there, but I'm giving her a real hard time today. Anya's awesome. But plausible? No, that's not the standard. Defensible? Nope, not the standard. Worth pursuing? Maybe, but not by telling an angry mob that we've got him dead to rights. We're going to win. They're stealing an election because he keeps saying it. Anya's got the plausible, defensible, worth pursuing. Here we go.
...to take. But you thought it was defensible or plausible and in the circumstances worth pursuing.
What?
Circumstances we shall discuss.
Worth pursuing. So, doesn't he sound a bit like Mitch McConnell here? Marr. This just ain't it. It's like, stop the interview right there, because you've so qualified what this guy is about to say. You've qualified it into oblivion. I don't disagree. Like, there were legitimate disputes about what to do in the middle of a global pandemic that goes on to kill a million people when you're trying to conduct an election. Like, those are legit questions. Great. How many witnesses do you need? How do you verify absentee ballots? All good stuff for us to know. Yep, let's litigate that. Let's make sure that we all understand what the rules are before the next election. Let's bring those questions to courts. That isn't election fraud. That is not people made up votes or people who are not able to vote voting. Callers, I see you. I will go to you. Hang there for just a second. I want to get going into the detail of this decision for just a small bit. These are some of the arguments and statements made in briefs that John Eastman signed onto or he himself wrote. Rampant lawlessness arising out of defendant states' unconstitutional act. Rampant lawlessness. He indicated that in that first clip, right, that Anya played for us, where he's like, they alterations of election law. I've talked about this before. No, John, you liar, liar, pants on fire. You cannot have any body of law that can anticipate every single factual circumstance for all of eternity and therefore is so specific as to now anticipate in detail what to do in every factual circumstance. It's not the way laws work. He knows that. In other words, there are agencies in Wisconsin, in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, in Georgia, like the Wisconsin Election Commission, that promulgate rules based on the laws to gap fill those laws. You know, when there's a global pandemic that'll go on to kill a million Americans and you're trying to conduct a presidential election. That's not alterations of election law. Specification of gaps in election law might be a much better way to say that. So again, rampant lawlessness, taken together, this lawlessness and irregularities are outcome determinative. This is the lie. This is what gets him disbarred. He doesn't have the evidence. He doesn't have direct evidence. It's not credible. It had been disputed. It's mostly junk science. It's based on hunches. Some of the evidence that he cited in his legal filings and argumentation was actually repudiated by the very experts he quoted. In other words, he says, well, expert Joe Doak says XYZ, and that means that the election was stolen. And Joe Doak, the expert, later says, I didn't say that. That's not what my analysis means. Here's another one. The probability of former Vice President Biden winning the popular vote in the four defendant states independently, given President Trump's early lead in those states as of 3 a.m. is less than one in one quadrillion. That's a lie. Junk science. He knew that. Let's take some calls before I have my head actually pops off my shoulders. Jesse from Madison, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say?
Thanks for taking my call. I agree with you emphatically, but except for the way you phrased about how this is the way the transfer of power has always happened since the beginning. It didn't one other time, and that was 1876. And in that case, once again, three slates of fake electors were sent to overturn the will of the people. And instead of having the election decided by voters, even if we're talking electoral college voters, it ended up being a negotiated settlement, if you'll call it that, in the House of Representatives. And the result was the end of Reconstruction, the birth of Jim Crow, and the dawn of the Ku Klux Klan, which was a stain on our society that was not even begun to be remedied for 90 years. That's what happens when you try to overturn the will of the people and install fake electors.
I love it when the callers are smarter than I am. And Jesse, that is such an important correction and historical context. Thank you so much. Anya, we should make a note. Whenever we see Jesse on the board, just hit record. Put whatever Jesse's going to say out on blast, because he gets it right, oh so right, every time. And I was kind of speaking hyperbolically, but being precisely accurate about what happened to end Reconstruction is so important, because we still feel those impacts today. Jesse, thanks again for listening and calling in so that we can get it right together. I'm going to read just, this is in the summary portion of the 128-page decision. The judge is talking about these arguments that Eastman made. Eastman did not offer any support for the factual claims of widespread lawlessness and failed to elucidate how the alleged unconstitutional actions of any defendant state were connected to the alleged rampant lawlessness it identified. Two things there. You have no freaking evidence. And you have no, even if you assume that there was rampant lawlessness, you've presented no argument, no connection between state actors, meaning election administrators, and such lawlessness that you haven't provided evidence for. And the judge goes on to say later, and moreover, you haven't made any connection that it was benefiting Joe Biden. That, okay, maybe there were some irregularities, but how do we know that that benefited Joe Biden? You haven't produced that evidence either. Cam from Nina, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say? You there, Cam? It's me, Margaret. We'll go back to Cam. Sorry. Oh, there he is. Hey, Cam, go ahead.
Sorry about that. My cheek must have hit the mute button. I agree with you entirely with just the ridiculousness of all this, and the last caller too had talked about how we had our votes ignored. On a lighter note, there was the one point in history for the U.S. where we had a emperor, but that was also very brief. The Joshua Abram Norton in 1845. On the other hand, though, on a more serious topic, I'm almost like at my wit's end with hearing how repetitive everything has been for any of this. Like, how are we still talking about Trump? How are we still talking about the fake state of electors? We have more important issues going on. OpenAI has their own robot, Figure 01, that is capable of reasoning. And I don't see any politicians talking about how we need to regulate this stuff, because as soon as the military gets their hands on it, which they probably already do, that's terrifying.
Yeah, artificial general sophisticated intelligence in a military application is the thing that probably scares me most. We know that some AI applications have been deployed by Israel and Gaza. We are most indeed on a precipice when it comes to AI. And just like every other massive technological advancement in human history, this is going to change the way we live. I think it's going to change humankind more than any other prior advancement. And point taken, Cam, that enough about this already. The thing that I think is so disturbing and why I wanted to get into this is I continue to hear, and just this week, Donald Trump attacked Megan Wolf and others and the Wisconsin Elections Commission and basically claimed the election was stolen yet again. So doing this deep dive and trying to, I'm always trying to frame this stuff a little differently, right? In other words, trying to offer my unique, maybe unsaid framework, which to me about this is it was incumbent for them to have proof. If you're going to make such a historically significant argument, this is why he gets disbarred, because he had no proof. He knew it. He also knew that the arguments he was making were legally unfounded. He knew that because he had said on the record the opposite before. So thank you for the call, Cam. I hear you. I just want to give you the name, and we got to take a couple of quick messages. We're going to come back. This is real quick messages here. I want to share with you the name of one of the quote unquote experts that Eastman relied upon, and what that expert then said, basically saying John Eastman's full of it. After these quick messages, Greg and Tom, I see on the phone lines. If you want to join the conversation, 855-752-4842. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Technicolor, I can tell that you can see, and yeah, I know how bad it must hurt to see me like this, but it gets worse. Now payback is bad chick, and baby, I'm the baddest. I'm playing with a savage. Can't have this, can't have this. Proud to walk away from something when it's dead. Do your dirty words come out to play when you are hurt? There's certain things that should be left unsaid. Not what I've got to say, right? I mean, come on now. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Cam texting in, and I really appreciate this. He says, thanks, Maggie. I have no problem with your show or Civic Media or what you're saying. Love listening. I purely meant in a political sense. It sucks that the wheel of justice is so slow that we have to keep revisiting these things and explaining these things. Thanks for the clarification. But I also agree with what I understood your point to be. Initially, I mean, you bring them together, right? And it's like, gee whiz, I wish we didn't have to explain this every day. But people keep lying about it. So the guy that Eastman and Texas relied upon in trying to challenge and throw out electoral college vote and slow down the democratic processes is a guy by the name of Dr. Chetty. And in April 22, 2022, he published an article in Academia Letters, and he criticized and disavowed how his analyses were used in these cases. I mean, no kidding. The claims, they erroneously claimed that there were exceptional odds in favor of Trump winning. My analyses do not support what was claimed about Trump winning or the odds of this, because effectively all the statistical analyses were based. This isn't how you do stats, by the way. I'm an economist. This isn't the reality is that Trump, of course, is going to win. Now, with that as our baseline assumption, does the data look like did he win? In other words, they set up circular logic. And so when the data didn't fit their prediction, their desire that, of course, Trump would win, you went, well, this means there's fraud. No, it means your guy lost an election. Greg from Waukesha, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Hi, Maggie. So I, too, like your last caller, Cam, I'm Trump fatigued. And all I need to say is, as Democrats, as liberals, we need to wake up, because if we don't, even if Trump doesn't get, you know, elected again, and I don't think he will, because I think the justice system will have the better of him. But even if he doesn't get elected again, we're going to get another, because I personally believe, Maggie, I texted in the other day, I think all Republicans are mega Republicans now. I think there's not a single one running for politics that has not drank the mega Kool-Aid. And we're going to see this for another 4 years.
Oh, I think at least, Greg, I couldn't agree with you more. I think this has, it's not the GOP anymore. It's not the Republican Party. It's the MAGA Party. And this is the brand. All right. It's a brand, I think, in many ways, that if traditional conservatives step back, for those that haven't abandoned the party and said, I can't stand by this. Andrew in Maine state texting in, the new GOP, Grand Orange Party, with the tagline, normal things of fraud. I love it, Andrew. Thank you. That when they step back and look at it, right, with objectivity and some honesty, it's a party now of those people who aren't human, they're animals, that don't deserve rights, and women and the LGBTQIA plus community and immigrants and all this basically hate. And then anybody who challenges what I say, they're a traitor, right? And let's lie about the outcome. We have got an incredibly important special guest coming up. Charles Franklin, Marquette's pollster extraordinaire, is going to be joining the Maggie Dawn Show. I want to just share a couple more things. So don't go anywhere. We're going to take a couple of messages at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere, because Charles Franklin, Marquette's pollster, is going to be joining the Maggie Dawn Show to tell us what should we take away from this April 2nd primer. Really excited to have Professor Franklin joining our esteemed show. But I wanted to just grab one other little piece from this decision. Here is what Eastman confided to his longtime friend, attorney Cleta Mitchell, on November 29th, 2020. Legal and constitutional trigger for legislative action after the fact of the election has to be a failure to conduct the election in accord with statutory requirements. Article 2, in my view, just doesn't allow the legislature to reclaim the power to choose electors after the fact if the election has been conducted in accord with the statutes. I can't imagine a legislature, particularly one with enough never Trump Republicans to make a difference, taking this step, which would be viewed as rather extraordinary, my opening point, taking this step, which would be viewed as rather extraordinary, absent pretty compelling evidence, would be unheard of. The statistical analyses that have been done might get you there, but it would be nice to have actual, hard, documented evidence of the fraud in the areas to which the analyses pointed. That is out of John Eastman's mouth on November 29th, after the election in 2020. He basically concedes not one, but two things there. We have no damn evidence, and without the evidence, there ain't no legal argument. Right there. By the way, if you're a total nerd, that's on page 23 of the 128-page decision. That is the problem. He knew it. He lied about it. He continues to lie about it. Anya, do you have that last little bit of Eastman sound?
Probably don't have enough time for it before the break.
Oh, we'll save it for after we talk with pollster extraordinaire law professor Charles Franklin, coming up after top of the hour here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Tom, you got about 10 seconds. Tell us what you think this afternoon.
Well, Maggie, I win. I won the election. That's how it goes. Now, we really need to make sure, really, truly, we need to communicate to all the viewers out there, all the listeners out there, this is not normal.
Yeah, this ain't normal. Lawyers don't get to lie through their teeth. I'm Maggie Dawn. Stick with us here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Marquette pollster Charles Franklin coming up after these brief messages.